We like to begin by putting our bodies in a receptive state. And we do that by making a sound together. The sound of Om. And we get ready for that with some conscious breathing. We're going to take three conscious breaths, and then we'll make the sound of Om together to take us into our heart space. Okay? Let's begin. Nice breath. Second breath. Third breath. And then with a deep inhale. Shanti. Shanti, shanti. We're studying the teachings of Satchidananda, a famous teacher. He lived here in Virginia for many years. He founded what's called an ashram, and the name of the ashram is Yogaville, and it's still there. It's south of Charlottesville, Virginia. You can go there and learn about his teachings and learn about the different aspects of yoga. We here are studying his commentary on a spiritual text from India called the Bhagavad Gita, the Song of God, the Bhagavad Gita. Our interest is to explore a path for our personal spiritual transformation. Anyone interested in spiritual transformation?
Yes.
What does spiritual transformation mean for you? Why would we be interested in that? Spiritual, is it just a good idea? Or is it something that we've made a resolution to explore?
I think it is of it as something that's sustaining outside of external circumstances. That way, you know, there's all this uncertainty and disruption in life, and if you have a strong spirituality, it can help you stay centered through those things.
Staying centered. Staying centered. Any of you ever read the news or have something happen at school and get upset? Have you had occasion when someone said something to you which is unkind and you got upset? Or said something which was untrue and you lost your centeredness, you lost your peace? The promise of spiritual transformation is we can return to that original state that we were born with, like little babies. Little babies. And keep our peace, no matter what the external circumstances are, stimuli are. However, to achieve a spiritual transformation, it's not sort of like grace, like a bird shows up and it's beautiful, and they say, ah, that's the grace of God, that beautiful bird showed up. We have to do our part as well. And what is our part? Our part are spiritual practices. Spiritual practices. If we're interested in a spiritual transformation, to achieve a state that some have called enlightenment, meaning you feel light and you feel lighter rather than heavier. Lighter, experience the light. I'm enlightened by the sunshine this morning. There are spiritual practices. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us those spiritual practices. By doing our part and learning the spiritual practices, we find, or I have found through experience, that I can maintain my peace more often than not. Not always, I get upset. And yet, through my spiritual practices, I find that I'm able more easily to return to my calm center and be more accepting of whatever life delivers to me, the universe, or you say God brings forth. Be more accepting. Be more accepting. As you sometimes have heard, what is mine to do and what is mine to put up with, and how can I have the wisdom to know the difference between what's mine to do and what's mine to put up with or bear? Questions? Here we go. Let's see. Our subject is Sri Swami Satchidananda. Sri meaning sir, and Swami meaning honored. Honored one, actually. And we go to the court. What do we call the judge?
Your honor.
And Satchidananda was addressed to Sri or sir, Swami, honored person. Sri Swami Satchidananda. His commentary, Bhagavad Gita. Our primary focus will be on verses with practical spiritual advice. A lot of the Bhagavad Gita might not seem familiar to us because it's set in a foreign country, a different culture, with some different ideas about life. For example, those of us who been brought up in the Judeo-Christian tradition have heard a lot about heaven and hell and angels and devils and so on. It's all part of our background, isn't it? We've grown up with it. In the Indian tradition, there is emphasis on another way of thinking about death, and that is reincarnation. And many people here find the idea of reincarnation attractive. In the Indian tradition, it's assumed that that's what happens, reincarnation. When our physical bodies die, our spirits return in another body. Today, in our physical incarnations, we may incorporate the spirit somehow of someone before us. It has some practicality. Some of us notice in our children, perhaps, that they remind us of ourselves. Some, of course, the looks do get inherited to some extent, don't they? We may see our children and say, ah, looks just like grandma or grandfather, so-and-so. So there is some basis for having a belief in reincarnation. Just as there is a basis for having beliefs in heaven, which is, are you sure it's up there? Where exactly? Is heaven a hell really down there? Here in Unity, we have some different ideas about heaven and hell, don't we? We believe that our consciousness right now can put us in a state of heaven right now. Or by the way we think, we can be in a living hell right now. And some people get too involved in our political discourse, depending on your outlook, may feel like you're in living hell, or finally, thank God, this is just the heaven I've been hoping for. heaven and hell. And the Gita is going to give us some instruction for transcending those ways of thinking. Transcending, feeling we're in heaven, even, and transcending feeling we're even in hell. Transcending that, which are mental ideas hold in consciousness. So it's important that we hold in consciousness ideas that support us. And the idea of transformation or enlightenment is that we transcend all of those ways of consciousness based on our thoughts and our minds. So we're going to get some practical advice. Questions? We're going to look at chapter 2 in the Bhagavad Gita, verse, or sloka as they call it, 47. So you see, we've come quite a ways in the Bhagavad Gita. We've learned various things. So those of you who are new to this, we're going to jump right in and just go from 47, which is actually one of my favorite slokas. I've memorized it. I like it so much. And Susan, if she were here, remembers it well.
Okay.
So let's look at it, and then we'll look at some commentary. And I encourage you to offer your comments or questions or ideas. It really enriches all of us if something comes up for you and you share it with others. So not just me talking. 47. As for you, who's the you that's referred to here? It's a character in the story. It's a metaphorical character. The real you is each of us here today. As for you, do the work that comes to you, but don't look for the results. Don't be motivated by the fruits of your actions, nor become attached to inaction. Do the work that comes to you. Do what is yours to do. This is actually a very deep statement. What's the difference between the work that is yours to do and what you think you ought to do or should do, or what your friends recommend you do, or what your parents told you you have to do? Or what you have told someone else they should do. You should, and you ought to. What's the difference between that mental activity, you should do this, you shouldn't do that, and the work that comes to you? The work that comes to you. Work that comes to you shows up without your having to think about it, or rationalize it, or, and this is probably the most important thing, we're all attached to being right. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm attached to being right about what I just said. But we're all attached to being right. Who wants to be wrong? Who wants to be wrong? A lot of our thinking is consumed with being right and making ourselves right. I do this automatically. It's not my fault. My mind does it. Not my fault. My mind does it. So, for example, someone will say something to me that throws me off center. And then I'll go away. And then I'll have a conversation with myself. I should have said to that person this. And if I just explained to them this, and then I had this long conversation about what I should have, would have wished I'd done in that conversation, which somehow got under my skin. I said something got under my skin. And I wished I'd explained it better, or I wished I'd pointed out more clearly how I was right and they were wrong. Anyone experience your mom doing that on your behalf?
Not again. experience. Oh, I said it differently.
I wish I'd said that because I'm right. They didn't see it, and they're wrong. When you can see that part of what the mind does or attempts to do is make others wrong and get deeply underneath that, it's really rather sad, isn't it? See that? You see that? Mm-hmm. Why should we make others wrong? It's kind of sad. Why are we so driven to make ourselves right? What's in it for us? Is there really any satisfaction in being right? Not really. What's satisfying is to keep our sense of equanimity and be able to treat others, no matter what they've said, with respect. Meaning we're willing to listen to them, even if we disagree with them. Listen to others with respect and compassion. They may have their own issues. And often we fail to do this. What I've just described, respect and compassion and generosity, is the definition of what? Love. We sometimes think of love as being romantic love. Well, that's a sort of love. True love is the ability to respect others, to be willing to hear them out, have compassion for what's going on with them, as it said, walk in their moccasins, and have a spirit of generosity. Generosity, be generous in our interpretation of what they've said. Rather than look for the bad or negative aspects, have a generous outlook. Be generous in our assessment of others. That's love. And yet, we often don't do the work that comes to us. We're in our heads. So how do we find out what is the work that comes to us? That is how we should just act naturally without having analyzed it and shouldn't not be involved in right and wrong. That's what this verse is referring to. The work that comes to you naturally, the acts that come to you naturally. Yes?
Can I ask a question about the first part of what you said? I think sometimes that when someone, part of a thought process that maybe you have a difficult time with that somebody has, especially if they can make decisions that then impact your life in a negative way. If they,
Do you have a good example?
The president. You know, I like what you were talking about. I agree with your example about politics, that I find myself very rattled by the political discourse and the conversations, and I think it's because there's this power to, you know, make laws or make decisions that potentially, I don't know, could make my children less safer or me less, or something like that. And so,
results that you don't desire.
Yeah, or right, and changes that I feel like I don't want us to go in this direction. And
yes.
So,
those are results.
Right, so yeah, so I think. I don't worry so much about saying, no, you're wrong, and I'm right, as much as I worry about the consequences or how that thought process will play out.
Projecting the future.
Right.
Anyone else have similar ways of looking at things? It's a common way of looking at things, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We hear something, we get upset by it, I do too. We think, wow, things aren't going to work out well. Things used to be better. Mm-hmm. we can let our minds dwell there. I often do. It's kind of fun in a way, dwelling on upset and chaos. My mind likes that. And the deeper question that comes up for us, what is ours to do? Not that we figured out, not that we made president wrong and me right. And that's probably not going to take us to a satisfactory course of action that brings more peace to everyone, including ourselves and the president. So the sloka here is, as for you, do the work that comes to you. That's the challenge. What is the work that comes to us? What comes up naturally for us to do that's different from our ideas of right and wrong, and good and bad? Then the next part of it is, but don't look for the results. When we prognosticate and look in the future and say, well, this is a bad thing, and now I'm predicting some bad things are going to happen, how can we arrange our lives in the following way? When we plan, make a plan, here's how I'm going to behave. I feel this is what's mine to do. I thought about it, I couldn't figure out what to do. I have two things in my mind lately, by the way, trying to figure out what to do, and I can't figure out what to do in these two areas in my life. So I'm waiting for the thing to do to come up for me naturally. And I'm being patient with myself, since I don't know yet. I'm waiting. See what a course of action that feels right for me. And the next part is, once I take that action, the sloka says, don't look for the results. When we plan an action, we anticipate results, don't we? It's part of what planning means, we anticipate results. The sloka doesn't recommend that we don't make plans and anticipate results. No, that's appropriate. What it does recommend is, in the moment of the action, don't be attached to the results of your expectations. In other words, whatever happens, no matter how careful you've planned it, how careful you've set up your anticipations, we are instructed not to be attached to the results. In the Christian tradition, it's called let God and let go. Of course, we are attached to the results, so if what we anticipate will happen when we do an action that sprang naturally from us isn't what we anticipated, and the expectations are dashed, we get upset. We lose our peace, don't we? We just realize this is what was ours to do. In a political sphere, what's mine to do? I'm upset about this, I don't like this, I don't like this. Looking deeply, what's mine to do? What is mine to do? What can I offer? How can I give? How can I make the world as I experience a better place and a safer place and a happier place, a more peaceful place? Something may come up for you. It's yours to do. This is what's mine to do. It may be just a small thing, but all large things are made up of many small things. And when you realize that, that may empower you to do that small thing. And then, when you do that small thing, in the experience of it, can you give up all the anticipation, no matter what happens, and be at peace with it? By reminding ourselves this is something important, we make some progress in our spiritual transformation. It's something we can do to assist our spiritual transformation. As for you, do the work that comes to you naturally from your heart, but don't look for the results. Don't be motivated by the fruits of your action. Whatever those fruits are, let that not disturb your peace, nor become attached to inaction. It doesn't help if you're not sure what to do, to sit back and do nothing, just stay on the couch or stay in bed. Give up, especially if you know there's something that is yours to do. You just know Jewish to do. Here's another alternate translation of this verse. It's the one I've memorized. I like it. You have a right to your actions. Everything is short naturally for you. You have a right to your actions, but never to your actions' fruit. Act for the action's sake, and do not be attached to inaction. Got it? Act for the action's sake. Do what is yours to do because it's yours to do, and it's the right thing to do. And no matter what fruit results from your action, and you develop the wisdom and the serenity to say, ah, that's interesting. It didn't turn out exactly the way I anticipated. And rather than be joyful, it turned out exactly the way I hoped, thank God. It turned out totally the opposite of what I anticipated. Jeez. See that? Either way is not very helpful or supportive. Wow, it turned out just like I anticipated. I'm so excited. Is the same as, this is a disaster. It didn't turn out the way I wanted at all.
I often, the phrase that had come to me a long time ago, and it goes through my head a lot, it's like, and I'm going to use the word God here very loosely, but that's sort of the way it began for me. It's like, God isn't so concerned with exactly what I'm doing. Now, this is broadly speaking. Let's say it's a choice between, you know, people get so hung up on what is God's will for me today. You know, that's sort of old thought. And they get hung up on that and stuck on that. And what came to me was, it's not so much what you're doing, but it's how you're doing it. In the sense that the energy you're bringing to it, and I think that the energy you bring to any act you do, that energy is like stone in a pond. It has a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And that ripple effect can be either very, very positive, loving, compassionate, etc. Or it can be all tense, tied up, and crazy and negative. So you don't know what the final culmination of your action, the result of your action, the kind of effect you have. That's what you let go of, you know. But that small piece, the energy you bring to anything, can have a profound effect on the people around you, which in turn, make that same determination, and it goes out from there.
Yeah.
So it can be as simple as, you know, washing dishes or doing the laundry. You know, you're angry, you're upset, and it has an effect on your household. This is very simple, but it can come down to stuff as simple as that. But if you do it, you know, just relax, do it, you know, as best you can, as peacefully as you can. That energy goes into the rest of your house, your children,
yes.
Your spouse. They, in turn, that affects them. So, to me, that's what that means.
Yes.
You know, so it can be very, very simple things. It doesn't have to be a global, shall I go out and march, you know, against whoever or whatever.
Great reminder, yeah.
You know, it can be as simple as washing the dishes.
Yeah. Yes.
So, anyhow.
Yes, there's another teaching, I'll comment on that, which addresses that specifically. And that is, when you're doing what is yours to do, do it with one pointed attention. Mm-hmm. When you're eating dinner, eat dinner. Don't read the newspaper at the same time.
That's harder to do.
I've heard.
I'll read the newspaper compassionately while I eat.
The reason for not reading the newspaper while we eat, which I've been guilty of, is not because it's bad. It's rather we're exercising and training our mind to have one point of attention. It's something we can do if we choose to help. It's like training. It's like getting on the field and training before the main event comes up. So it's a way of training, and there are other ways of training. Because, as you point out, if we can keep one point of attention, we're washing the dishes, we wash the dishes, we keep an idea of peacefulness in our hearts as we wash the dishes, rather than negative or other kinds of thoughts in our minds. I want to give an example of how this sloka worked in my life. Years ago, my parents paid me a visit. They were careful with their money. They got some kind of airline ticket from Los Angeles to come out here, which was cheap, but they were on standby. They had to take standby flights. So they called the airport when it was time to go home, and they got not a reservation, but the agent told them, good likelihood you'll get on this flight. We drove all the way up to the Dulles Airport. They were on standby. We waited. Well, the plane filled up. There were no standby seats. What were we to do? It's kind of upsetting. But it wasn't. My mother was a very positive person. She said, well, let's just go down to the mall and have a picnic. We said, okay. And she said, we can come, it was in the morning, we can come back here later on in the afternoon, try and pick up that afternoon flight. So we said, great idea. We went down to the mall, we bought some sandwiches, it was a beautiful sunny day, we laid out in the grass, and I had my camera with me. And my parents took a walk. And as they were coming back, I looked up, I had my camera, I went and took a picture. Have I shared this before? No. Anyway, it was the most beautiful picture. Mm. My father was in stride, and my mother was holding his hand, and he had big smiles on the face. It was a beautiful picture. Mm-hmm. And I have that picture. So, sometimes when I get in the grocery line at the grocery and I see another line is moving faster and it's much shorter, and I move over there, and then the clerk goes to the manager unless there's some problem. Yeah. And the line I got out of had three more people, and they all got through faster than me. I'll remember my parents' visit. And I got emotional thinking of this picture, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I'll think to myself, wow, what blessing is in store for me here that I don't see? This didn't turn out the way I expected. There's no room on standby. What blessing is there here for me that I'm not seeing? And if I do remember that, I'll look around and see if I can spot the blessing that I hadn't previously noticed. Yes.
When I was 24, I went to the dentist and did not know that if you went to a dentist out of network, they charge you differently. Did not know that. At 24, I was not aware about a $2,000 dentist bill. At 24, when you make no money, you know. And it... I was in a panic because I didn't have the money to pay it and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I remember going to church, and after church, sitting in the pew and crying because I don't have this money. What am I going to do? And how am I going to pay for this? And a couple days later, a job that I had left because I did not like it. I did not like the job. It was a very stressful, uncomfortable job. Like, it was not a great situation. But they called me and they said, the boss has left and we want to hire you back and we'll pay you whatever you need. $2,000, right? Right? So I said, and I thought, and I really did not, like, I this month, and I was like, oh, I don't want to go back into that environment. And I thought, that maybe it'll be better, I don't know. So I threw out a number at them at 24. I said, oh, $50,000 a year. And they said, okay. And I was like, so then I thought, well, I guess I'm going back. So it was, so this happened, and at the time I was sort of dreading going, but you know, the whole thing. But then I went back and I figured out how to kind of make the best of it. And then I had a little extra money now, and so I got a gym membership. And I joined this gym, and I met their father at the gym on the treadmill. I was running, and we started talking.
He was running too?
Sorry?
He was running too?
He was on the elliptical, mm-hmm. but you know, he smiled, you know, whatever. And so I have never forgotten, when you told your story, I've never forgotten. Like, people will say, you know, I just thought the greatest thing that ever happened to me came from something that had me crying in church, you know? And you just, you never know how it's going to turn out. Right?
Yeah.
You don't. And it wouldn't have happened because I was in such a state. I wouldn't have gone back to that job,
mm-hmm.
even with the money, because it was a terrible environment. Now, fortunately, the boss had left, so when I went back, it was better. But it was a terrible, stressful environment, especially for someone young, right out of school and stuff. But I was desperate. So I said, okay, I'll do it. I'll come back.
Good story.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You have a right to your actions, but never to your actions' fruits. Act for the action's sake, which I heard you did,
mm-hmm.
and do not be attached to inaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about the political climate, and over this past year I've joined at least 6 groups on immigration, voting rights, environment, whatever. But, and sometimes it gets very frustrating because it takes a lot of time and energy to go to all the meetings, and you don't see a whole lot of action happening, just very small little things. But I think one of the most rewarding things has been joining a group of women from this church that meet with Turkish Muslim women, and we just get together every Friday in a conversation group to help them with their English and teach them about this country. And it's been so rewarding, very small thing, but, you know, we've really developed relationships. It's really nice.
Yes. So the challenge here is multifold. The first challenge is you have a right to your actions, do the work that comes to you. Well, what is that?
Yeah.
How do I know what's mine to do? And it's a big challenge for most of our lives because we're in our heads. I should do this. People
it's been
like
a year, and I still
that.
Don't know what's mine to do, you know?
Right. So we often wonder, what is mine to do? How can I get in touch with that part of me that knows what's mine to do? There's a part of me, maybe didn't know that, but there's a part of you that knows what is yours to do. It's not up here. It's a different energy, a different intelligence. How can I get in touch with that? And when that different intelligence speaks to me, how can I recognize it, discern it, and not have my mind destroy it or make it wrong? How can I honor what it's mine to do? Doesn't mean I don't use my mind to make adjustments and take into account how others are impacted and so on. But I found in my life, the thing to do often just comes to me without thinking about it. When I go on my walk in the morning, that's when it most often happens to me. I've been thinking about something at night and mulling over it, can't figure out what to do. I have a habit of going on a morning walk. And on that walk, often something will just pop up. That's what's mine to do.
You keep wishing for a blizzard. I keep seeing you thinking about a blizzard. You want a blizzard.
Oh, that was
on your
fun.
Walk. No,
a Facebook post. So, one, to have the understanding that there is some intel, there is some part of us that knows what is ours to do, and getting in touch with that and being able to discern that, having the patience to wait if we're not clear for that knowing to come forth. And not being over-attached to our thinking about things and figuring it out and seeing what's right and what's wrong, that can often lead us astray. You have a right to that action, but never to the action's fruit. Even something came up for you to do, you still have no right to the results. That's still, in a sense, in God's hands, not yours. The only thing you have a right to do is say, thank you, God, no matter what comes up. And look for the blessing. You can train yourself to do that. So you're acting for the action's sake. Got it? And do not be attached to inaction. Don't give up. Shall we look at the commentary? See what Satchitananda has to say. This is an oft-quoted sloka. He says, your duty is to perform the act, but not for its fruit. The Bhagavad Gita holds this in a flippant light. When something comes up that's ours to do, in the Gita it's described as your duty. Your duty is to do what came up for you naturally. First to discern it, the difference between you thinking about it and what just came up for you to do, and then it's your duty to do it. But do it being open to any result, not being attached to any result, and actually training ourselves to be open to success or failure, both of which are phantoms in some sense. We name things success. Ah, I planned to do this and it was successful. Planned to do that, it was a failure. Well, those are really phantoms. It could be that whatever showed up was somehow a blessing for us. It's just in our way of looking at life, we haven't learned how to see all the blessings. We can choose to train ourselves to do that. Claiming the fruit of your actions is the forbidden fruit spoken of in the Bible. This is a Christian thing too. It's not just from the Hindu tradition. That was the first commandment given by God to the very first man, Adam. That commandment is given to Atman also. Some of you may not know what Atman is. It's a Sanskrit word. It's best translated as capital S self, as opposed to ego self. Well, I have an ego self. We're familiar with that. We also have a capital S self. That's the part that knows and can communicate to us what is ours to do, capital S self. It's called the Atman in Sanskrit. So this commandment was the first commandment given by God, given to the first man, Adam. The commandment is given to our capital S self, Atman also. Adam and Atman and even Adam are all more or less the same. He's going to make a little story about that now. Adam, Atman, and atoms just function. Okay. Ask an atom, why are you constantly revolving? What's in it for you? What are you expecting? What are you anticipating is going to happen? It's none of my business to know that, says the atom. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Can we take that attitude? I'm doing what I'm called to do. It's none of my business, in a sense, to know why. I've just realized that's what's mine to do. It just acts. It never worries about results. And that's what the Lord says here. Adam, Atman, and atoms are—they just function. They just function. They just function. Ask an atom, "Why are you constantly revolving? It's none of my business to know that. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It just acts. It never worries about the results." That's what the Lord says here. You are not to be affected by the act. Not to be affected by the act. Right now, I'm looking out at you. We need to close now, by the way. It's 5 to 11. But I'll just close with this comment. I'm looking at all of you. Anyone not breathing? We're all breathing. Okay. So who's doing the breathing? Why are you breathing? And when did you choose to breathe? When did you decide it was good or bad? When did you choose not to breathe? We can hold our breath as just a blessing that was given to us. Our breath breathes us, or we can look at it as God breathing us. Sometimes we do conscious breathing, most of the time we don't. God breathes us. Can we let what is ours to do come the same way our breath flows and develop the ability to discern it? Ah, that's my breath flowing. Thank you, God. Ah, this is what's mine to do. I tried to figure it out. I was really hoping if I did this, I would get some results. I could do that, other results. If I don't get the results I'm looking forward to, I'm going to be really upset. If I do get the results I'm anticipating, I'm going to be so happy. To make some progress on our path towards spiritual transformation and being lighter and being in the light, being enlightened, we can memorize a sloka like this, remind us not to be attached to the fruits of our actions. And we'll forget, but we can remind ourselves again and again. Reverend Russ in the sermon today talked about new thought, the tradition of new thought, and how through our thoughts we can change our consciousness. And here's an example of a way that you can choose to think, if you choose, and it may change your consciousness. Questions, comments before we close? We like to close the same way we began, by taking our consciousness down into that Atman, our capital S self, our heart space, our Christ consciousness, and we allow the sound of Om, the sound of Om, to take us out of our heads and down into that space. Let's begin with three breaths. And with a deep in breath. Peace.